This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are back on the road again, so to speak, as we come to you from Keeneland Racecourse here in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. Want to welcome everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming, either on your smartphone, your computer, or your tablet. It's all there for you at horseracingradio.net. JT, good to see you again, my friend.
Yeah, beautiful day in the Bluegrass, and looking forward to having some fun this afternoon.
Yeah, it's always great to catch up with the trainers of our sport and those individuals who help make our sport a success, and tonight is no exception, and this is going to be a lot of fun. Our guest tonight doesn't saddle many horses. As a matter of fact, since 1991, he has sent out 341 runners with 26 winners, but he can make a couple of claims which many trainers in our sport cannot. He has trained a grade one winner, a multiple grade one winner at that, and he has saddled a horse in the Run for the Roses, the Kentucky Derby. How cool.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's great when the smaller stables do well, and he certainly has had a remarkable career.
And he is trainer Tom McCarthy, who joins us now on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom, welcome to the program. We appreciate the time.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And, you know, I make that statement, and I say that you can make a couple claims that a lot of people in your position cannot, and that has to mean an awful lot to you.
Well, I hope so, because it's been very interesting, and I've enjoyed it. And it's certainly been a welcome part of my life, I'll tell you that. So let's just go on, and I'll answer your questions.
Well said. And, of course, that one Kentucky Derby appearance did come with your general quarters in 2009. We'll talk about that story here as we move throughout the program. But, Tom, let's go back to the beginning here. Take us back to the beginning. How did this love affair with horse racing begin for you?
Well, my grandfather was a jockey in Ireland. He raced for his father, who was a trainer over there, a trainer and breeder in Ireland. And he came to this country with eight horses back in the 1800s. And he just stayed. When the horses were walked over to the old Jamaica racetrack, he went with them. And as I understand it, you know, I hear all these stories, and I don't know if they're true or false, or everything's been added, but, you know, when an Irishman tells you these stories, you have to believe it might be a little something else going with it. But as the story goes, he couldn't, they wouldn't let him in, and he went around and snuck through the fence somewhere, and some Irish grooms put him up in the hayloft, and on Sunday, when this trainer wanted to breed some horses, his experienced help didn't show up, and the grooms told him they had a jockey up in the hayloft. He said, get him down here, and he breezed the horses, and the trainer hired him, and he galloped horses in New York for quite a while. And back then, there was no Florida racing in the winter or anything like that, and the young horses and the older horses came up on the beaches in New England, as I understand, and they would train on the beaches because it wouldn't freeze up, and that's what they did back in those days. And he happened to meet my grandmother, who also was from Ireland, and they got married, and they stayed there in Connecticut where the training went on the beaches, and my father was born there, and he and his cousin raced horses during the 20s and 30s in New England, and when the war came along, things kind of ceased. That's World War II. And after the war, my father didn't get back into it right away. But we did go to, we moved to Tucson, Arizona to get into quarter horse racing. And we were into that for a few years, and that's where I did most of my galloping, and right in Tucson at the racetrack there. And I've always been interested, even as a youngster. I always enjoyed the pictures and talking about racing, and it was just to a youngster going over to the tracks in Rhode Island during the summer, I was just enthralled with the racing. It just, you know, it was just something I couldn't wait to every weekend I was over there. So that gives you an idea of how I got started. And then I was accepted to Ohio State Veterinary School, and back in the 50s, but they wouldn't give me a deferment after I got out of college, so I was drafted and went into service. And when I got out, they had changed the curriculum at Ohio State, and I'd have to go back to school for a year and a half. So instead of doing that, I started training horses. And I did that for a few years, and then when I got married, I ceased training for a while and went into education because there was no winter racing for me, and I had to get things going. And I bought a little farm, and we raised some mares and foals out here, and I did most of my racing at night up at Old Turfway, or Old Latonia, as it was called. And I just kept going from there.
Well, that's a great story, and, you know, it's kind of similar to the way Dwayne Lucas used to do it, huh? You from the quarter horses to school, yeah, teaching in the winter time, and then racing all summer long.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I appreciated the quarter horse racing for the simple reason it gave me a chance to really understand what was happening on a horse's back. And I just kept on galloping until I got a little too heavy for it. When I was about 17, I was just too heavy to exercise anymore, and that's, you know, and I helped in many other ways, doing stalls, doing them up after they got done. Everything that I could do, I did. And I came up under some pretty good horsemen.
Yeah, who were some of those people that helped you along the way there, Tom, when you were just coming up?
Well, I guess two people in particular, a trainer by the name of Joe Puckett here in Louisville. He used to have some of J. Graham Brown's horses, and I was with him for years. And I learned a great deal under him. And Alex Hardhill, a veterinarian here in town, kind of took me under his wing. And when I got started, he came and did everything he had to do for me for a year. And I finally asked him, I said, hey, when are you going to send me a bill, Doc? He said, well, I'll start sending you a bill when you start winning a couple of races. And that's really how I got started. And and, you know, it's pretty hard sometimes to get stalls at Churchill, but I kept on trying, and finally I, you know, got my stalls and went right along, and I would get up 3 o'clock in the morning and get in and get my horses done up and galloped, and I only had 2 or 3, and then at about 7 o'clock I'd go over there and take a shower, change my clothes, and go to school as a teacher. And I'd get there about 8:30 and teach, and at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd come back and feed and do what I had to do. And we only lived about 3 blocks from Churchill Downs, so it was pretty easy for me to do.
That's a perfect schedule. And during the summers then, where would you take off to and run your horses during the summers during those days?
Well, the summers we went to Chicago. We went up there every summer. I was with Joe Puckett, and I had a few horses and raced under his name, really, as the trainer. I couldn't get stalls by myself, but he could, and I was with him. I was his assistant. And we'd go up there, and then later on when I got married, I pulled a trailer up there. We had a trailer in the trailer park, and I was getting stalls, and we did that for years until the family started coming along. Then it just, you know, wasn't feasible to leave during the summer. And I just stay around here and race around in Kentucky, you know, and down at Dade Park back then, and that's what it was called. And now it's called Ellis Park, and then up at Turfway, things like that.
Talking with trainer Tom McCarthy on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom, I'm a native of Massachusetts, so when you referenced your grandfather coming here and starting in New England, and then both your dad and your uncle training horses on the New England circuit, I can remember all the different tracks that used to be up there. And of course now there's hardly anything left, and I'm sure when you look back on the heyday of New England racing, it probably brings back some fond memories, doesn't it?
Oh my goodness, yes. I'll tell you what, Lincoln Downs and Narragansett back then during the summer was like Saratoga is today in upstate New York, because many of the affluent people had cottages and homes up around Narragansett Bay and along the shores, and racing was very big up there, and I met a great many trainers up there, and you know, you get to know everybody after a while, it just seems like, and there were some very, very good races that I can still remember up there. And everything seems to have gone downhill, I guess, since the, in the 70s and 80s, things just started going backwards up there. But I think today racing has got to get back on a firmer ground and attract some of the younger people come on out and see some wonderful, wonderful animals racing. And I really think that racing will be here to stay just as long as we, continue in the same vein that we're going.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's a great sport. And so many of the people that I have met over the past decade and a half of being in radio and traveling around the country to different tracks have started their careers on those New England tracks, that New England circuit. And it's amazing, you know, what type of a turnout those tracks were able to create when you think about all the big names that we have in the sport today.
I didn't quite understand your question.
No, I was just talking about all the people that I've had the pleasure of meeting as I've traveled throughout the country,
yes,
that started their careers on those New England tracks. And it really has been a great farm system, so to speak, for big-name people that are in the sport today, hasn't it?
Oh, I'll tell you, it's really something. You know, they talk about Jim Fitzsimmons, you know, at Train Nashua. I met him up at Narragansett. He was he'd come in for a steak, and he was sitting there by the side of his barn. We were about two barns away, and I told my father, I said, "This is Mr. Simmons." He says, "Go up and introduce yourself." And he was sitting there. He had a white shirt and a straw hat on. I'll never forget it. So I went up there, and I introduced myself and talked to him for a few minutes, and he laughed. He says, "What are you going to do when you get a little bigger?" I said, I think I would like to be a veterinarian. He says, "Well, that's smart." He says, "Don't come around the racetrack." He says, "Go where the money is." So, anyway, that was a thrill for me. But I've met many, many people in the racing industry, and I have enjoyed it totally. And I've been in Kentucky ever since the early 50s, and this is my home. I have a farm here, and I enjoy it very, very much.
So have you trained basically for yourself your whole life, or did you have clients along the way?
What was that again?
Have you trained for yourself basically, or have you had some clients along the way?
Well, I basically train for myself because of what I was doing in the beginning, but I have taken other people on since then, and both of my sons have gotten into it with me. They enjoy it, and I have one client from Florida, and I've got some horses coming to me this winter from Texas. As soon as I'm going down, I have been going into New Orleans for the last 6 years, but I went to Tampa in 2009, and I'm going to go back there this year for the simple reason I have some Florida breds in the stable, so I'll be at Tampa this year.
Have you not been back there since 2009?
I beg your pardon?
Have you not been back to Tampa since 2009?
In 2009?
Yeah, was that the last time you were at Tampa Bay?
Yes, that's the last time. I've been talking to people, to trainers that go down every year, and they say it's changed so much I wouldn't even know it. So I'm very, very excited to go back and see just, you know, what it's like. And I really enjoyed racing down there.
Yeah, and considering the success that you had in 2009, especially with General Quarters down there, you would think that maybe you would have gone back before then. How come it's been 6 years since you've been back to Tampa?
Well, one of the main reasons, some of the stakes, I developed them down there as a 2- and 3-year-old. It was a nice sandy track, and it's a wonderful place to train horses and race, but they're... Potts had gone down, and New Orleans had the more lucrative stakes program for older horses, mm-hmm. and so I went there the next year, and had a pretty good year the following year. I had raced in 4 stakes, and we ran second in every one of them down there that year.
Well, the one thing about Tampa Bay Downs that I can tell you is I worked for Keeneland for 12 years in the publicity department. My office was in the press box, and I'd look outside, and it was snowing, and I'd see all those people at Tampa walking around in shorts, and I would be insanely jealous. So you can't beat the weather in Tampa, that's for sure.
Oh, yes, the weather there was absolutely beautiful. The year I was there, it was very nice. And, a lot of people go down there. I think now it's quite an area for retirees, and I'm seeing more and more retirees come out to the track, and I think it's got a good future down there. But the money is not as great as it is in New Orleans, and I think that they've got to invest a little bit more in the stakes department, and that's what brings people in. Good horses just seem to bring more and more people into the track. They like to see the better races.
Talking with trainer Tom McCarthy on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom, I want to go back to something you talked about a little while ago when you said that you were teaching during the day and then running horses at night at Latonia, which is now Turfway. Talk about being able to balance that the two different worlds, training horses, racing at night, and then teaching during the day. How difficult was it to balance all of that?
Well, it was the only thing I could do. It was pretty difficult, especially in the winter. I remember one instance, I won a race at Turfway, and it started to rain and snow. It was in January, and, after that, you take the horse over, and they take blood, and they take urinalysis, and... This fella, it was so cold, he just wouldn't urinate. And I was over there about an hour and a half, and finally I got out of there about 12 o'clock. And the time I got him back to the barn and done up, it was almost 1 o'clock. And I started back, had my own trailer and my own truck, and I started back, and they closed the roads. And I was lucky enough to get behind an 18-wheeler, and I followed him for about 30 or 40 miles, and as we got down towards closer to Louisville, the roads were a little better, and I think I finally pulled in about 4 o'clock in the morning. So I just stayed there and did him up, got my horses out the next day, and then went to school in the clothes I had the night before. I tell you what, I had quite a time, but it wasn't too bad once you get used to it. I'd only race once or twice a week, and it's just one of those things. And I always used to like to be in an early race because I could get away a little quicker and get home by 12 o'clock in the evening, and that wasn't too bad at all.
Well, that's a supreme dedication to our sport to do something like that. I mean, I can't even imagine how trying that must have been. And then you had a family as well, so it wasn't like you were just responsible for your own actions. You had all that responsibility added into the mix.
Well, you know, things aren't too bad if you arrange them, but I was very lucky to have two boys that really helped me more than I can't tell you how much work they actually did here on the farm. My oldest son is a very good horseman. He's my assistant. He's an assistant trainer, although he does other things. And then I have my second son, who's an attorney. I've got a couple of horses for him. But when they were young, they got stalls. They helped with the fencing. They did everything. They bush hogged the fields. And I tell you what, I couldn't have had two finer boys. They did very well, and I'll tell you what, they worked right with me. If we went out early in the morning, they were with me right till dark every single day. And they enjoyed it, and they've just, you know, going on to have their own careers too. And I miss them very much. And you don't know how much you miss somebody till they're gone. And now I have, you know, I do most of this all myself now.
Well, it's great that your whole it's a family affair dating back four generations. So it's a tribute to you and your family that you've been in racing that long. I don't think there's a lot of people that can make that claim either.
Well, I tell you what, I have never been back to Ireland to see just exactly where my grandparents were from, but one was from Cork and the other was from Waterford. But the McCarthys that I descended from came from a small town on the Black River called Tallow, and it's a horse place. And I think my great-great-grandfather also was in racing, from what I could find out from my brother. But it goes back quite a ways. And I guess we've been in it for, you know, in Ireland, the national sport is horse racing. And, you know, you just pick that stuff up, and it's hard to get rid of.
Well, Tom, it doesn't sound like you would have been able to do this without the support of your family. And you mentioned how much it meant to you to have your two boys with you on this journey. How important is that for a trainer to have the support of their family? Because let's face it, this is not the easiest profession in the world.
Well, you know, I tell you what, I can't tell you how much they've done for me. I'd be gone sometimes right after school, hauling horses up to, right outside of Cincinnati, and the boys would do all the things. They'd put the mares and foals away, do the feeding, you know, everything. And I wouldn't have to worry because they knew what to do and how to do it. And my wife's been a great supporter of it. She just loves the horses, and we just go away from there. I've also had three girls. They didn't do any of the farm work. I never wanted them to do any of the farm work, but they were always supportive of it. And when I run a horse, it seems like the whole family comes down there and enjoys themselves. And we have a good time when everybody's there. Sometimes, you know, outside the barn, we have a little cookout or something like that when we're late in the evening. And, we always draw a crowd. And all you have to do is start cooking something, and pretty soon you got a bunch of people around.
Yeah, everybody likes free food. Was your wife a racetrack girl, or where did you meet her?
I beg your pardon, where is she from?
Yeah, was she a racetrack girl? Did you meet her on the track?
Oh, no. No, my wife is a registered nurse, and she went on and got advanced degrees, and she ended up teaching in college. She taught in various colleges here in Kentucky and Indiana. But she still supports me.
Yeah, it's worked out pretty well for Tom McCarthy, who, as we told you, he was a teacher, biology, I believe, right, Tom? Wasn't it biology?
Biology, chemistry, and education. I had a triple major.
Wow, impressive.
And, of course, he made that trip to the Kentucky Derby in 2009 with General Quarters. That is a tremendous story, which we're going to tell you coming up in the second half of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tom, stay with us. We're going to get to a short break. We will come back, and we'll tell that story of General Quarters and kind of look back on that very memorable moment for you when you saddled him in that Derby 6 years ago. Hard to believe it's been 6 years since General Quarters.
It's crazy.
Yeah, unbelievable. All right, stay with us. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Fasig Tipton November sale annually posts the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world. Over the past 10 years, 142 fillies and mares have brought prices over $1 million, and 3 world records have been broken. Last year, the Fasig Tipton November sale sold 23 seven-figure fillies and mares, more than any other mixed sale in the world, with an average sale price far greater than our nearest competitor. The world's premier breeding stock event, November 1st, 2015 at Fasig Tipton. Where will you be?
And they're off to New York, the premier state-bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program, the best program.
Don't miss Maryland's Day at the Races on Saturday, October 17th at Laurel Park. Come celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Jim McKay Maryland Million Day, a celebration of Maryland's horses and lots of fun for all ages. First race is at 12:15 with 11 exciting races. Great entertainment on the track and a collector's cap, too. Don't miss out on the fun at Laurel Park on Saturday, October 17th. For more information, visit MarylandMillion.com or MarylandRacing.com.
Start now with your Cal Density Mare and Foal Feeding Program. Sales results were obvious at this year's Keeneland September Yearling Sale. Yearlings produced from mares fed Cal Density through their formative year were impressive, as well as horses trained and raced in 2014 and so far in 2015. Clean radiographs, conformity, strong bones, and overall health was the big winner at auction and on the track. Order your plan today at caldensity.com or call 877-744-9006 for more information.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton
on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Lot Du is now within two lengths of the lead as they turn for home. Hold Me Back is going to angle wide off the far turn. He's six wide in the center of the racetrack. General Quarters has the lead. Hold Me Back is coming. Terrain is coming from far back. Masoni fourth toward the inside. Final furlong of the Toyota Bluegrass. General Quarters has the advantage. Hold Me Back is coming late. General Quarters and A-Bar Koa spring the upset in the Toyota Bluegrass Stakes. Hold Me Back home second. Masoni was third. Terrain was fourth.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld with you as always, and visiting with trainer Tom McCarthy. And his story is certainly unique, but much like every trainer that we've had the chance to visit with, it is a story of persistence, and it's a story about the love of the game. And that's certainly true when you talk about Tom's career. We're going to spend the second half of the program looking back at one of his more memorable moments, and that was making an appearance in the Kentucky Derby with the only horse he had in his stable at the time. That was General Quarters. We'll do that in just a moment, but want to remind you that you can go to our website and check out a podcast of this show and all of our programming. It's all there for you at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. So download these shows, listen at your leisure. And Jude, so many people taking advantage of those podcasts. We receive countless emails. We receive countless social media notifications that people are really enjoying the ability to take these shows on the road with them.
Yeah, well, it's great. A lot of people like to listen to them while they're running or at the gym, or if they're making a long drive, they download two or three of them and listen. And it's always fascinating to hear these stories of trainers and our Jock Talk show with the jockeys. Everybody has a unique story, and people in racing have some really fascinating stories, and it's always a pleasure to listen to them.
Well, enjoy those stories and those shows at Horse Racing Radio. .net. Tom, we just heard that call of General Quarters winning the Bluegrass Stakes here at Keeneland, and that was a very special moment for you. But the story of General Quarters goes back even further. It goes back to the Keeneland sale here, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Well, take me back to the beginning.
Well, I was looking. I go down there every year during the sales, and I was looking for a horse that I could afford, and during the course of going down there, it's a very long sale that lasts about a week, and I would go down every day and look at many of the horses, and I looked at General Quarters. I didn't know his name, but he's a great big gray horse. He was a battleship gray then. He looked more like a bay than he did with a gray, and I loved his breeding, but he had a little funny way of going when you'd walk him, and with one leg, he kind of put it out to the side and then brought it in. And a good horseman noticed things like that. And I said, well, I don't know about this fellow. And I marked it in my catalog. And the next day I went back and I watched him again. I had him walk him again. I liked him even more. And I thought I would see if I couldn't get him at a reasonable price, and he finally came up, and I did bid on him, but it went beyond what I wanted to pay. I didn't have a great deal of money. I think I only had about 16 or 18 thousand that I wanted to spend on the horse, and I don't remember what he went for, but it was more than I had. And I wanted another horse a little later, and I kind of refrained from him. I guess I could have gotten him, but I went for this other horse, and he went for almost $300,000, so I had to back down. So the following spring, I was looking for something that I could claim, especially I wanted a two-year-old, and I had a couple of older horses that weren't, let's just call them cheap horses. But I wanted something that I could develop, and I happened to be looking through the racing form, and I looked at the two-year-olds, and I generally look at the breeding, and I said, well, I know that breeding and that horse, and he came up under the name of General Quarters, and I looked at the went back and got my catalog and looked at it, and I had some comments in there. But I also noticed he had some very good times in training, and he's running in a claiming race. And I debated for a while, but I finally decided that I'd go ahead and claim him, and I did. And he had won the race. It was a 4.5 furlong race, claiming race, and I did get him. And then when I got him, he had just a little ankle trouble as a 2-year-old, and his ankles were quite warm when I got him, so I just took him that summer. I raced him once after that. As a matter of fact, I looked for another claiming race to put him in because of his ankles, and I couldn't find anything, and I put him in the Bastrop Manor Stakes. And he did very well. He was leading right up until he got into the turn, and then he just tired. I didn't have time enough, really, to put a good basic under him where he'd go on. He just had been sprinting as a 2-year-old in those short races. And the Bastrop Manor was 6 furlongs. But I told my wife, I said, I've got a good one here, and I'm just going to go ahead and develop him over the summer. And all I did was, long, slow gallops and a lot of ice and a lot of water every single day. I got rid of my other horses because I had so much care into him. And but every day it would be the same thing, ice and water, and do him up with a poultice. And we went right up until the fall, and I got a few good breezes into him, and he looked like he really wanted to develop. His ankles cooled down for me, and we went to Keeneland. I think the first time I raced him at Keeneland, it was in a maiden special weight, and he was a good fourth. He got trapped down along the inside, and I had Bill Trillo on him, and Bill said, oh, this horse is much better. If I could have gotten out, I'd have been right there. So 2 weeks later, I went back to Keeneland in the same type of race, and we were in a race. It was 3/4 of a mile again, and we ran second, but a good second. But the horse that won the race went in 109. It was the fastest 2-year-old race of the year down there. So I was quite pleased with that. And with that, I said to my wife, I'm going to have to take him down south and develop him because this is going to be a good horse. And with that, I made arrangements and went down to Tampa and just went on from there. And he began to develop. He began to grow, and he began to put on weight. And he actually became a beautiful-looking horse. And I think we were second in a couple of 3/4 races, but the minute I stretched him out, he became a different horse. And I think the Sam Davis, we broke the track record in the Sam Davis. We were 1 second off the track record in that, held by Street Sense. And after the Sam Davis, I really knew I had something special. And then just went on from there and development came up, into Kentucky early, and I got to nice cool weather up here, and I had a chance to graze him over here at Churchill and got him ready for the bluegrass. And actually, he ran an excellent race in the bluegrass. The A-Bar Corps came in from New York to ride him for me, so we did very well. And then from there, we just went to the Derby. But in the Derby, it wasn't the type of track that he liked. It had rained, and it was muddy, and he has a big foot. And he got hit twice before they even got into the first turn. And he came back after the race. One eye was closed. He had one eye completely closed where he got hit in the clot. And one nostril was actually packed with mud. That's the first time I ever had anything like that happen. But He beat some very nice horses in there. I think he finished about 7th or 8th, but there was 18 horses in there, and he did very well, I thought. And but he chipped a knee in that race, and I tried to hold him until the Preakness. We went to the Preakness, and he was running out right in mid-pack and started to make a nice move and then got hit again
and when he got hit the second time, he just kind of spit the bit, and that was sayonara for him right then and there, because I said after that, I just I took him down in Larry Bramridge in Rudin Riddle Hospital, took out a chip in his knee, and I just gave him till the next fall, and then took him down to New Orleans, and he was second in four stakes down there, so I knew I had him coming on the way back. But anyway, we came back from New Orleans and came up to Kentucky, and the co-feature for the Derby that year, I did win it. It was a grade one, and we beat some wonderful horses in there. One of the horses that we beat was second, and he went up to win the Arlington Million in his next start. But just to give you an idea how what nice horse he is. He's currently standing in Lexington, Kentucky, and he's over at Polk McLean's farm, and he's gotten some really nice mares this year, and we hope to see some of his foals pretty soon. I have three of them right now, and I've got one colt by him. I think it's going to be a real nice colt. I haven't, he won't probably start until November or so, but I think he might be a decent colt.
Tom, have you had the opportunity to go visit him on the farm at all?
To do what now?
Have you had the opportunity to go visit him at Pope's farm?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have an Italian mare over there. I got, she won stakes in Italy, and I bought, and I've got a couple of foals by her, but this last foal was her first colt, and I went over there, and I mean, he is gorgeous. I'm going to ship him down to Ocala pretty soon. He'll spend his yearling year down there, and then he'll go into training down in Ocala. I've had some good luck sending my horses down there, and they break them and train them, and then I get them back in the spring. But I think he's going to make a very good sire. I don't think his youngsters are going to be, you know, very precocious at the beginning of their career. I think as the distances get longer, you're going to see more and more of his winners. I think, you know, he likes, I'm hoping that he'll get these horses that might run a little longer. And what I've seen of the two-year-olds that I've got, they probably will. When they stretch out, they'll be much better.
Does he get a big type of horse like him? Does he stamp his foals?
Yes, he gets some nice-looking horses. I'll tell you what, the two-year-old colt that I have by him will be a very nice horse. They're kind of a big-boned horse. They have good size to them, and they're very sturdy, and they seem to be very sound. And I'm just hoping they'll go on from there. This is his first crop this year, and he's got some very good-looking babies on the ground that I've seen. And I'm very anxious to see, you know, as time goes on, how these horses will stretch out. And I hope they do anyway.
Talking with trainer Tom McCarthy on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, looking back on his multiple grade one winner, General Quarters, who was so brilliant in winning the Bluegrass Stakes right here at Keeneland in 2009, of course, went on to compete in the Kentucky Derby. And Tom, so many times we'll have trainers on and we'll ask them about a big horse. We did this with Shug McGahee a while back, and we asked him about Personal Ensign. And much like you, he walked through every single race pretty much of her career, and he remembered every single detail of where she was and what she was doing in each of these races. And it sounds like for you, General Quarters is very much like your Personal Ensign. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. Certainly is.
Take me back to the day that you won the Bluegrass Stakes here at Keeneland, and put me there with you. What was that moment like?
Well, I'll tell you what, that that was one of the highlights of my life, I guess, because up to that time, I hadn't won a Grade One race. This was a Grade One race, and there were some excellent horses in there, and he was training very well. As a matter of fact, I blew him out. We went 5/8 of a mile, I think, in 57 seconds at Churchill Downs. It was last good work before then. And John Asher and some friends, John Asher is one of the people that actually runs the show over at Churchill Downs, and they came over to the barn right after that. They were up there watching Derby horses get ready, and some of the horses that were going to race in the Bluegrass, and they came over there in the car, and they were all excited. And I said, well, yes, he is training very well. And we went down to the Bluegrass, and I was very confident. I won't say I was cocky, but I was confident. And I thought he might go off as one of the favorites, but I think he finally went off at 13-1. And it was a beautiful day. It was a very crisp day in the spring, and everybody felt good. My son ran the horse for me, and everybody was there. And when they were out on the track warming up for the race, I could just see something different in him. He just looked, I could watch him kind of come together. And I watched Abe Arcola handling him. And I said, oh, my goodness. I said, this horse is going to win the race. So I went down on the track right where they go out, and it was pretty crowded. And there was a bunch of people down there, and they were the Toyota people. And we watched the race, and coming around the turn, he went from about fourth or fifth, and he made a nice run. I told Cohen not to do anything, just let him be on his own, let him run his own race. But when it's time to go, you just reach down and hit him once, chirp to him, and then get him on the outside. And that's exactly what he did. He just, when he hit him, I knew that he'd take off, and he went into another gear, came around the turn, and he passed everybody. And coming down the stretch, I tell you what, I don't know if I yelled or hollered or what I did, but I do know one thing. I was watching him attentively, every move that he made. And when he went over the finish line, at the time, I don't think I was excited. I was just amazed with the moment. I was just, well, it's hard to explain. It's just like everything had come together all at once, and here it was. And then the Toyota people, they turned around, they asked me who I was, and I told them I owned the horse, and I just won the Bluegrass, and they started bowing to me. And I was pretty surprised at that. He came back, and we took him out in the infield, and naturally they took the pictures. And then going back to the stands for the first time, crossing the track, I looked up at the stands. I guess I had tears in my eyes. And the people were clapping. I said, oh, my God, they're clapping. I can't believe it. And as I got closer and across the track and started to come into where the horses come out for the race, I saw so many of my friends clapping, and I took off my hat and started waving. I don't know why. I just wanted to acknowledge it, I guess. And it was a pretty happy time. And as you know, I'll tell you a little story that goes along with that. This is a true story. After the race, and we'd gone over and gone into the director's room, and everybody came in, and everything was going on. I went back for something outside, and as I was going by, as you know, the name General Quarters is used in the Navy for battle stations.
And it's a naval term. As it's going out, there was a young, well, I won't say a young girl, a girl in her 30s or so, was pushing a man in a wheelchair, and he had a cap on, said U.S. something, Navy. And as I walked by, she stopped me. She says, "Was that your horse?" And I said, "Yes, it was." She said, "This is my father. He's a Navy veteran." And she says, "This is the first time he's ever come to the races. We live here in Lexington, but he's never been, but he had to come to see your horse." I said, "Well, that's fine." I reached down and shook his hand, and he looked it up at her, and he said, "Mary, don't you dare tell him how much I bet on his horse." I got the biggest kicker out of that. But I thought that was something. That was a highlight for me. And they went their way. But that was a wonderful day. Very, very, you know, memorable day. You think, I'll take that one to the grave, I guess.
Well, that's a great story. And I don't know if you know this or not, but the great Jenny Reese, the turf rider for the Louisville Courier-Journal, she was such a big fan of that horse and of yours, and she kept touting that horse all week long. Everybody that she came in contact with, she said, you know, Tom's going to win this race. He's going to win. Don't even think about it. There's only one horse going to win this race. And then afterwards, you know, she went back to everybody she told, which was everybody. Said, "I told you so. I told you so. I told you so." And it was really cool. It was great to see. You know, we were here, and it was great. It's such a great story, and you know, such dedication to one animal. I mean,
and this
really
is what this sport's
story.
All about, right?
Right.
I mean, this is you can't go out and buy
an animal.
The New York Yankees and win the World Series. But Tom, you can have one horse and you can have a shot to win the Kentucky Derby. It's amazing.
Well, I'll tell you what, he was a joy to my life. I lived with him for 3 years, you know, and just I did everything for him. I didn't want anything else. I just took care of him, groomed him, and picked his feet, washed him, and, you know, got him ready and trained him. And I did everything, I guess, but gallop him. he was a joy. But it took a lot of time.
How much
reason,
General Quarters? How much General Quarters memorabilia do you have in the house, Tom?
Quite a bit. I've got quite a bit. I've got several towels and a lot of the pictures and things, you know, that were in the paper and things like that. I have them all together, and one of these days I'm going to have time to get it out and get a lot of the things into pictures and things like that. And I guess they'll be evenly distributed to the children when I'm gone. And hopefully they'll enjoy it too, because they were all there that day, and they were part of it also. So he was quite a horse. Hopefully I'd like to get another one just
like
him.
Will you still pop in the replay of that bluegrass and go back and watch it from time to time?
Oh, my wife does. When friends come over, they like to see it. I don't. I don't like to see it anymore. I just keep it the way it was, you know. It brings back a lot of memories. As a matter of fact, my oldest grandson, I was over there the other day, and he played it on his computer for me, and he asked me a lot of these questions about it and everything, and it was awful nice, yes. It's just a high point in a person's life. You know, there's many stakes. I guess everybody that has a stakes winner of some accountability, it's a high point in their life, you know, and especially when you've been around horses all your life and you've been through some, horses that, what we call cheaper horses. It's just a dream, you know. Just one of those things.
Yeah, well, Tom, it's been a dream It's been a dream come true for you, and it's been great for us to visit with you for the past hour and hear your story and look back on that memorable moment. That's truly what this sport is all about. And Jude and I want to thank you for all of your time here tonight, and I want to wish you all the best moving forward, especially with those general quarters babies.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Tom, thanks so much. We'll look forward to seeing you at Churchill Downs. And Tom McCarthy here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. And Jude, just such a delight to hear the enthusiasm in his voice and to hear him look back on that day when they win the Bluegrass. And I mean that. I use that analogy a lot. You can't go out and buy the New York Yankees and win the World Series. You can't go out and buy the Pittsburgh Steelers and win the Super Bowl, right? I mean, people don't have that kind of money, but you can have one horse in this game. And as long as you have one horse, there's hope.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's a real cool thing that he actually saw that horse at the yearling sale, wasn't able to get it, claimed him later on. And, you know, it was just meant to be. It was one of those things that was just meant to be.
Claimed him from Ken and Sarah Ramsey. How about that?
Mr. Ramsey never brings that one up,
no,
does he?
No, he does not. But how great is that? To see everything come together. Like you said, it was meant to be. It was destiny for Tom McCarthy to have this one horse. And it's one of the truly great stories in the sport of thoroughbred racing that we've seen really in the history of the sport.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And it's just fantastic how his life has been really interwoven with thoroughbred racing his whole life. So great show.
What is it with these quarter horse guys all of a sudden getting to the top in our sport here, too?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call him a quarter horse guy.
But he spent time with quarter horses.
Well, quarter horses, I mean, they're cool. They're America's horse. I mean, yeah. You know, so quarter horse racing is enjoyable. I enjoy quarter horse racing. Well, I miss it at the Red Mile.
Yeah, I do, too. Well, Tom McCarthy, our special guest, our thanks to him. And like all of our guests, we'll receive a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strip, so we'll get those over to him, and really been a delight to hear his story. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, go to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast at your leisure. For our producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, for Jude Feld, and for our guest, Tom McCarthy, I'm Mike Pena. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.